You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. Tonight's going to be freestyle. I might mix the like two or three episodes we got in the chamber, but we're basically caught up. But this is going to go up right away. And so I'm just going to do a brief. Hey, Em, what's happening? How you doing? This is Future Editor John Gentile, and I'm here with Em Moore. What do we call you now? Senior site co-editor or something like that, or senior co-editor or something?
I think it's co-senior editor.
Co-senior editor. There you go.
Yeah. Of Punk News.
So today Em got the best news of her life, which we're going to talk about that later on, a certain tour, which I'm sure Em's very excited about.
Before that, I have so many notes.
I actually might go to Philadelphia, Em. Because Alice Cooper's opening. Did you get the press release, Em?
I didn't get the press release. Did you get the press release?
Yeah, maybe we should try to get in for free. We'll see.
Send me the press release.
I will. I'll just do a brief recap of Party in Jabba's Palace, which was Sunday. So Sunday was Party in Jabba's Palace. It was pretty cool, man. It was the idea that I had is really, this was what the idea came before the bands, is Philomoka in Philadelphia, where I throw almost all my shows, except for when I throw my Creep Records until it gets shut down. Like every other time I throw a show there. Actually, when I think about it, Em, do you realize that but both times Creep Records have been shut down, I've thrown a show there within 2 weeks prior.
No.
The last time it was within 2 days prior. But it was a coincidence. Like the mail was already in the – I mean, the letter was already in the mail before my show, so it wasn't me. But, yeah. Man, I'm bad luck. Anyways, so Philomoka, I realized that the stage looks a lot like the throne in Jabba's Palace. Oh, and check this out. Not to get too far off track. I'm trying to think, where was I? I was at a record – no, I was someplace dealing with records. I'm talking with a record guy. I was at a record. It's actually an ice cream shop that has records in the back. So I was at this record.
Oh, nice.
And so they have like record drops, like maybe once or, you know, once every other month they like put out a whole bunch of records. And so it's like I see the same 10 guys, and I mean guys, there every time. And so this one guy says, "Hey, man, what are you doing this weekend?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm throwing party." And this guy's like 45, so that's like prime Star Wars age. And I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'm throwing a show called Party in Jabba's Palace." And he's looking at me like he's crazy. Like I'm crazy, rather. And I'm like, you know Jabba the Hutt? He's like, maybe. I'm like, have you seen Star Wars? And he goes, "I've heard of it." And this guy's a 45-year-old American, and he's heard of Star Wars. It's like, oh my God.
It's inescapable.
I know. I don't know if the guy was effing with me or he was just kind of whacked out, you know? And so then I had to describe to him what Jabba is. Try describing Jabba the Hutt, a giant slug that sells drugs to someone that doesn't know what that is, you know?
Well, you see, it's a giant slug. He sells drugs.
So I noticed that the stage at Philomoka looks a lot like Jabba's throne room. So I came with the idea for parties in Jabba's palace. And that we'll have a giant Jabba the Hutt on stage. We'll have a Han Solo frozen in carbonite on stage. And between the bands, we'll play music from Star Wars or Star Wars-esque music. And it will open with like that scroll, you know, the famous Star Wars scroll across space. And so I booked a show. And it was on Sunday, and so people came, when people came in, I actually didn't have enough Star Wars music to play the whole time, so I played like cheesy sci-fi music when people first got there, like Rocky Horror Picture Show, Science Fiction Double Feature. I've got a disco version of Doctor Who that I played. I played Neil Young Trans, Neil Young's robotic era, Chrome, that kind of stuff. And so anyways, then once the show actually started, I had a scroll. Actually, I'm going to read the scroll to you. So I had a custom scroll made by – there's this website that they'll make the Star Wars scroll for you. And so, you know, it's a Star Wars theme song. And then it says, "A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away," in blue letters, right? Yes. Then it, you know, fades away and then the scroll comes on up. And it says Star Wars. I wanted to say something funnier than Star Wars, but that was actually more money. So I'm like, oh, it'll just say Star Wars, you know? So the Star Wars logo fades away. Then it says Episode 69, Party in Jabba's Palace. And here's what the scroll says as it's scrolling. Yeah. Things were like super shitty on Earth. Like really, really shitty. Like New Coke shitty. Plus, Philadelphia licensing and inspection was cracking down on all ages venues, all while letting million dollar high rises spring up everywhere. And then it continues. And it says, man, this scroll's taking forever. It says, our favorite intergalactic punk rockers, the Mean Jeans, wanted to play a show, except they couldn't find a venue that could contain their insanely rad vibes. That is, until everyone's favorite spice-stealing, gigantic space slug, Jabba the Hutt, said his palace was looking to party. And then I jumped up on stage, and I made like a dance remix of the Cantina song, you know, do. So it had like really like bumping bass lines. And then I yelled at all the band's names and stuff, and I jumped off. And then the show opened with Membranes, and Membranes were really, really cool. Membranes are kind of like Johnny Thunders, Lou Reed, New York Dolls, and they rocked out, so people dug them. Then after that, we played disco Star Wars music by Miko, if anyone knows who that is. Then it was Blank Chrome, and Blank Chrome played like really rocking street punk, not street punk, really rocking punk rock that was like, I don't know, just kind of like, I don't know, maybe like kind of like Jay Riotard, like really fast, aggressive, snappy punk rock, and they were cool. Then I played the Ewok rap. And Lapty Neck. Lapty Neck is the song that Cy Snoodle sings in Jabba's Palace. Cy Snoodle's okay. Like the really funny, she's a Paloic. She's like the green frog looking thing with the long snoot. Ewok celebration is the Ewok rap. It's actually a dance song that George Lucas commissioned to kind of coincide with Return of the Jedi. And it has a rapper rapping in Ewokese. That rapper, and you know who that rapper is, and before he became famous, and he's uncredited, but who is the rapper on the Ewok rap song?
Ooh, I don't know.
Curtis Blow, who denies that it's him, but it is definitely why? Him because I think he's worried about maintaining his street cred or something. But like,
it's
like
fun.
The voice, the phrasing, the way he like kind of raises his pitch at the end of a lot of the lines, it's definitely Curtis Blow. So we played that. Then was Soji. Soji was super cool. They play really fast political hardcore, and it was cool as they were the most political band there that night, so I was kind of psyched to have them there. They were awesome. The crowd was really into it. And then we played Disco Empire Strikes Back. And then Mean Jeans played, and Mean Jeans were awesome. They played a bunch. They basically played the greatest hit set, some of their newest stuff, some of their big hits. They played some of their jingles, or their jingles, if you will, which is among my favorite stuff by them. At the end of their set, they did I'm Gonna Pogo Before I Go-Go. And then I threw a whole bunch of balloons on the audience, and people enjoyed that like they always do. And then everybody had a rad time, and it was super cool. I'm not sure the audience really got the whole Star Wars thing, and maybe Star Wars isn't as prevalent as I think it is, or maybe I feel like Star Wars isn't that nerdy anymore. Like in the 80s and maybe even in the 90s, like Star Wars was super nerdy, but now I feel like everyone loves Star Wars. And like if you're on, like I'm on Instagram or whatever, people that I know and whatever, like one of my friends, he's got a very attractive girlfriend and she's really into Star Wars, and she's always like putting on like Star Wars gear, like look at my new Star Wars gear. Yeah, kind of just like Star Wars thirst traps, frankly. And so like I feel like Star Wars isn't that nerdy anymore, but I feel like people didn't totally get that it was in Jabba's palace, even though there was a giant Jabba the Hutt right there, you know what I mean? Like I feel like they didn't quite get the and that goes back to a theory that I have, is that if something is too high concept, it won't work, at least in the music context. You know, like if people don't understand what it is within 2 seconds, they're not going to get it. You know, like when I did Price is Right for the low budget, said it was a total disaster. People just didn't get that it was Price is Right. They just didn't get it. You know, people, and bizarre people didn't appear to know what Price is Right was at that show, which really annoyed me. Like, how do you not know what Price is Right is? You know,
again, well, it's like, everywhere.
Like people would go up, on stage at the, I'm getting off track, but at the low budget show where we played Price is Right, well, Price is Wrong between the bands, they would go up on stage and they wouldn't like understand that you're supposed to like bid on stuff. Like they would just stand there like dumbfounded. I'm like, what do you think is supposed to, you know? So anyways, so I mean, some people enjoyed it. Interestingly, people really did love the Star Wars disco music. Like people were like dancing to Star Wars disco. I don't even know if they knew it was Star Wars. I think maybe they just thought it was like disco, you know. So I think some people got the concept, but not everybody. Although people all had a good time. And then actually at the end, the music that played on the walkout was I found some guy like remixed a bunch of Star Wars music into like what do they call it, like vaporwave music.
Oh yeah.
And it was sure. like really high intense, like electronic dance music. So at the end, it was like this really, really bumping dance version of like the Imperial March and stuff, which was kind of funny.
That's cool.
And so I mean, you know, nothing crazy happened. It was a good gig. I will say I was slightly annoyed at the end, in that, I can't remember if I've talked publicly or not about my frustrations with a certain sound guy who I like and is a really good sound guy. And have I talked about my frustrations with him at the Ramones show? Maybe I didn't.
You might have touched on it, but it wasn't a big thing.
All right, well, so listen, I like him. He's a nice guy. But, you know, so I'm looking at my Jabba the Hutt, and Em, like I sent Em a picture of my Jabba the Hutt. Maybe yeah. We'll do a picture of it in the story. It was crappy looking, but it was just crappy enough to be funny and not so crappy that it was weird. Like it was funny crappy. You know what I mean?
It was like good crappy.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at it, and actually it was like way bigger than I thought it was going to be. Like I thought it was going to be like, I don't know, 5 foot by like 8 feet. Cause I actually hadn't assembled it in my house. I built it in parts because it was so big. I would have to transport it, you know? So I didn't actually assemble it till I got there. And it was like 9 feet by like 20 feet, which is like huge. Like it's so much bigger than you might think it was, you know? And yeah. I'm like looking at it, I'm like, wow. Like, I'm like, that's actually kind of cool looking, man. And so Philomoka, they rotate things on their walls a lot. Like sometimes they'll have posters from movies from, is it Zaire? And do you know the country where they make like hand painted posters of American movies?
I am not sure.
Maybe that's like Cote d'Ivoire. There's an African country that's famous where they do hand-painted versions of American movie posters. And where that comes from is in the 80s or the 70s, when they didn't have like print shops to make movie posters, when American movies would get imported to there, they would – maybe it's Nigeria. They would hand-paint the movie posters for outside the movie theater in Nigeria, whatever country it is, you know. And so people collect those because they're pretty cool looking.
I think it's Ghana.
That sounds about right. And so sometimes they'll have something like that on the wall, or sometimes they'll have a bunch of work by a local artist like Lita Gray, who's is a semi-famous tattoo artist in Philadelphia. They had her art on the wall one time, and right now the walls were bare. So I said to the sound man, I'm like, hey man, like, you know, that looks pretty cool. Maybe it could be a semi-permanent, you know, fixture at Philomoka. And then, I mean, like, he really pissed me off at him. He said it's better off as a semi-permanent fixture, like, out with the recycle. And I'm like, you know, on one hand, I get it. Like, it's kind of, you know, I get it. It's really just a piece of cardboard spray painted, and it looks crappy, you know. And it's, you know, but on the other hand, I'm thinking, you know what, dude? Like, I tip you, like, really well. You know what I mean? Like, really well, you know. And it's like, I'm kind of annoying you from the last time because you did just your job and not one step more, even though I tipped you really well last time. And I like if you don't want it there, I get it. You know what I mean? You can say, ah, it's cool, but you know, but it was just kind of a dick about it. And I don't even think he was trying to be a dick. Like, I think he's just like one of these guys that like a robot. You know what I mean? Like, this is what I do at work, A, B, and C, and that's all I do. You know what I mean? Like, I was he's the kind of guy that doesn't put in the 5 to 10% extra effort at all. You know, and it's not even a spite thing. It's just a mentality thing. You know what I mean? Right. And so, like, that really kind of bummed me out. Like, it really annoyed me. And on one hand, if he was like, you know, John, you know, the wall stuff is picked by the guy that runs it, not me, or we're trying to cut back on that right now, I'd say, all right. But the way he was so, like, flippant about it, like, really annoyed me. You know what I mean? And honestly, yeah. I was disappointed that my jab that I did put not a ton of work into, but about $60 into, I was like, oh man, because I kind of fell in love with him after I put it up. You know, I'm like, oh, that looks pretty cool. So I threw it out onto the street. And then I helped him finish cleaning up. And you go find any other promoter that helps the sound man finish cleaning up the floor. You go find me anyone, Em, except for me. So, anyways, yeah. we take the bags out, and I notice it's gone. And I'm like, did someone take the Jabba? Well, no, I mean, it's in the trash. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, did someone take the Jabba? And it turned out that the membranes took it and they set it up in their rehearsal studio. And that like made me really happy.
That's awesome.
You know, so at least it got some Jabba kind lives. Of use. You know what I mean? So like, yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. That like, I really appreciate that they did that. And I thought it was cool that they, I felt that maybe not everyone got the concept, so it was cool that at least they got the concept and appreciated the crappy Jabba. And plus, it's kind of cool they have Jabba the Hutt in their practice studio now, which is kind of cool, you know.
Their practice studio is now Jabba's palace.
It is. You're right. Totally. I honestly, especially not now, but even back then, I would never live in a punk house. But if I did, Em, I would definitely call the punk house Jabba's Palace. And I will say, Em, not to go too far off track, you know, punk houses always have like these really cool names. Like Philadelphia, there was the Waste Space, the Halfway House, the Golden Tea House, Luigi's Mansion, House of Yarga. They always have like these really cool names, but and then it's just a basement that's like filthy. Like, how come they never decorate the place like Luigi's Mansion? Great name for a punk venue, like an awesome name. But then why not decorate the basement like it's like the Mushroom Kingdom from Mario? You know what I mean? Like, that'd be awesome. Like, wouldn't it be awesome if you go to a show and you're in Mario World and there's a punk band playing? Like, wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be so cool.
But they never, like, punk houses never do that.
I wonder why. It's not punk enough.
But that's probably part of it. But also, I think a part of it is punk houses really are a total mess. And that, like, if you go to a punk house and you go to a show, it sort of feels like someone's driving and sometimes not, but nobody's driving. I threw a show in a punk house once, House of Yarga, which is now shut down. And I booked it, and there was a guy there, and he seemed surprised that there was a show there, and he just ran the sound for me that night. And the point being is, like, it's like no one's really directing or controlling anything there, you know, and it really is a punk house, you know. The point I'm making is, like, it seems like there's not that much coordination or effort put into actually make it something beyond just being a waste space, you know.
Just somewhere to crash.
Well, I mean, like a place where they throw shows, but there's not the idea to, can we make it more, you know. So
yeah.
So anyway, I'll give the listeners a little teaser. I am going to be cutting back on shows to a degree, but the next punk news show, Em, will be New Year's Eve in Philly, and it's going to be friggin' awesome. So there's that.
Woo! Exciting.
So anyway, Em, that was Party in Jabba's Palace. It was fun. The all four bands were definitely cool for sure.
Well, and the Jabba, come on.
And the Jabba was the coolest for sure.
So, I just downloaded the pictures, so they will be formatted in.
I actually did take a picture of it with my phone while it was set up, but I didn't realize it at the time. But like because it's like dark in a venue, the picture's like pretty. Like, I'm gonna look at it right now, but the picture like is not good and it doesn't really do it justice, you know.
Oh sure, so. Okay.
Unrelated, Em.
Yes.
I feel like the comment section has been more positive recently than usual. You disagree?
I think in certain cases, yes. I think in other cases, maybe not.
Well, why are you hemming and hawing? Why do you say no?
Well, I'm not saying flat out no. Like, I do think it would be really nice to see some of the good ones.
But you're mitigating it. So what's causing you to hesitate on co-signing my statement?
I don't like when people, and I mean, you can do whatever you want. It's fine. But like, I don't like when people use my name in the comments. And it just kind of bothers me.
What article are you talking about?
Kind of makes me angry. Soji and Winterwolf split.
Let me go look. Let me see how they use
like,
your name.
It makes me feel good because it's like, haha. You know, I'm
well, it means you're known, Em. I mean, like, the fact of the matter that's good. I mean, like, seriously, I'm being getting serious.
No, for sure. But yeah, overall, I think they've definitely been on a more positive swing, which is really nice to see. You know, like, especially on stuff like the what's it called? The fucked up cover.
We do have about four or five alt-right trolls that keep popping up, though. I noticed that.
Yeah. I do hope they just kind
of mmorenews.org. This is brutal. Well, I mean, Em, you shouldn't, first of all, you shouldn't get, that's the quote from the article.
Oh, yeah.
Em, you really shouldn't get too bummed out about that. A.
Oh, I'm not.
It means you're making an impact. B, it means you, And when he says this is brutal, does he mean good or bad? Because Soji's actually freaking awesome.
Like, Soji is freaking awesome.
Soji is. So I don't know if he means brutal in that, like, yeah, Black Flag is brutal. Or does he mean like, oh, it's brutal? Like,
I hope anyway. It's like Black Flag is brutal. But you know what? Yeah, it's fine.
And I mean, really, I mean, but also, like, the fact of the matter is, you should take pride in the fact that you're a young woman that's threatening the middle-aged dudes. You know what I mean? Like, so I mean, like you should be happy about that. I'm being dead serious. Let me see if this guy's a troll or just a dude. Let me see.
No, I am happy that I strike fear into the hearts of men.
So keep doing what you're doing, Em. I mean.
Thank you.
Like, if your goal is to become known as a writer, then that's a good sign. If that's your goal, you know.
Oh, no, 100%.
Plus, also, Em, I mean, like these middle-aged dudes are not – first of all, with regards to journalism, especially music journalism, middle-aged dudes are not who are driving the conversation right now, for good and for bad, in that, like, it does seem that, like, maybe middle-aged dudes are cut out from the music conversation to a degree, which is kind of not cool, but on the other hand, they're not the only part of the music conversation, and the young hip people are who are driving, as always, the young hip people are the people that are driving the music conversation right now, so that's good for you. So the fact that you're upsetting him is good for you. Let's see if this guy's a troll or not, though. Let's see here.
I do hope the positive comments continue, though.
I think this guy's just a dude, so I you know, whatever.
That's don't get fine. Hung up on it. That is I'm not. I'm like, it's all good.
So anyways, so Em, why are you so happy today?
Yeah. Okay. I have so many notes. Are you ready for lore? The answer is yes.
What do you mean for lore? You mean L-O-R-E? You mean like legend? Is that what you mean?
Oh, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
As in, here are all the little hints and different things. So, earlier this week, first of all, My Chemical Romance, shared a cryptic post on social media.
Cryptic, so, you say?
Cryptic, yes. So, it looked...
You know, I didn't truly understand the meaning of cryptic for a long time. I thought cryptic meant, like, grave-like or scary, as in crypt. But it actually means like crypto, as in puzzled or disguised. Go ahead, Em. I'm just purposely interrupting you while you try to talk about your favorite article. Go ahead, Em.
I mean, the crypt as in grave works for this. So, you know, it's good.
Indeed it does.
Hey. So this post was like the city lines, that kind of cityscape thing. It was like white and gray. There's confetti raining down, and then there's these like Russian looking letters, right? So everyone's like, what's the deal here?
Do you mean Cyrillic letters, M? Cyrillic alphabet letters? Is that what you mean, M?
There we go. Cyrillic. Yes. That is the word. So, you know, there's those like letters and symbols and stuff. So if you put those through kind of like a translator or whatever, it gave you a TPK. So if you know anything about My Chemical Romance, when they broke up, they were working on their fifth album, which was called The Paper Kingdom. And it was like their most...
Oh, I thought it was Toilet Paper Kings. My bad.
That's the... Oh, actually, there is a Canadian band called Golden Shitters. They are real. That would be a really funny thing for like a spinoff band of them. But yeah, so The Paper Kingdom, they were working on, it was their darkest material to date, and they scrapped it because they broke up and they didn't really, I don't think they really liked the direction it was going in. But again, I don't know. Anyway, it gets scrapped. One of the songs that was supposed to be on that album reportedly was Fake Your Death, which of course was the last single that they released before, or the single they released after they broke up. So that was not the case. It was not new music. It was not an album announcement. Doesn't mean there might be something in the future. Who knows? But they announced Long Live the Black Parade, 10 stadium dates in the U.S. and one date in Toronto.
Is that near you?
Yes.
That is near you.
That is near me. And it's celebrating 17 years of the Black Parade. And I thought it was really funny that a lot of people were like, 17 years isn't an anniversary year. And it's like, yeah, it is. Any year is an anniversary year, you know? 17's a lucky number. 17 might hold significance. I don't know. You know, like there's so much, right? There's so many things. So they announced this in an Instagram post and a video. So the Instagram post and the video both have the same description. And the description is like, there's all of these new places and all of these new characters mentioned. Like there's his grand immortal dictator, there's the concrete age, there's drag. You know, all this stuff that isn't part of existing Black Parade lore. So it's like, what could it be, right? So watching the video, unlike when they announced their reunion, which was with a summoning, which was like the 18-minute long video that was filled with like Easter eggs and all sorts of stuff. There's some things in this video. It's not very long, but you know, you gotta read into things and kind of speculate, right? So it's long live the Black Parade. There is now a dictator in power, we're assuming. And the Cyrillic font comes back. It's used in captions, which translates to men at attention. And all of the fonts and everything that are used were created by a linguistic specialist who has worked with Gerard Way before on like the Killjoy comics and the Umbrella Academy comics and stuff. So that's just a neat little tie in there too. And it's also like, what does it mean? So anyways, men at attention is how it starts. There are these like soldiers. There's this huge kind of ornate palace. There's this spiral staircase. We see a little bit of like the Grand Dictator, but not a ton. There's a woman with a dog sitting in a chair. My theory is that she is either fear or regret. And those are also characters who you can see on the Black Parade album art and in all that kind of stuff. So I think that's who she represents. And when he goes out and opens the door and like steps out on the balcony, you can see the Cyrillic letters on all of the not all of them, but most of the buildings. So like you can see something that looks like an M, you can see something that looks like an R. There's an X and other things. Nobody has been able to figure out what that means yet. It hasn't been fully decoded, so a lot of people think they're hints for a cipher that's coming up. It could also just be that the band wanted to have some drama and have some fun, so there could be no meaning, but I don't think that's right. I think there is meaning. Now, you're asking yourself, who is the grand dictator, right? Well, of course, my working theory is that it is the patient from Black Parade, because as we know, the Black Parade follows the patient's story and follows his journey into the afterlife and everything. So just from the brief kind of like hints of this person's face, looks very similar to the person who played the patient in the Black Parade videos. So what happened? You know, there are things you can read into with the lyrics where it's like, you know, will you be the savior of the broken, the beaten, and the damned? And it's like, is that what he did when he crossed over? Was it like, like he has a savior complex and that takes over? And you know, his mama, like, is there a meaning related to this storyline where that's the war where he like sparked it and took power? You know, there's all these things, right, that it could be. So that's pretty cool. Also, in the description, there is a number, and it is 600, or sorry, 6,246 days since the Black Parade were around. Now, of course, with the Black Parade, it is the album, and the Black Parade is My Chemical Romance's alter egos for that album. So the name also refers to the band in this specific era since they last performed. Now, if you, what was 6,246 days ago, it was their final shows on the Black Parade Is Dead tour, where barring their recent performance of the album in full at When We Were Young Fest was the last time that they had toured the album and played it in full live with all of the theatrics. Now, those two shows took place in Mexico City and in New Jersey. So I that's just a fun little thing that I thought was cool. The Black Parade shows are like known to be super dramatic and super over the top because there's such a story element and there's all these things. There is a comment that Frank Iero posted on Instagram where he said, yeah, like we have so much stuff in store. This is like a once in a lifetime thing, which kind of makes me go, you know, what's going on? Because with the When We Were Young performance, obviously it was very good. But they didn't have any of that. Like, they didn't have the drama, really. They didn't have the paint. They didn't have the costumes. Like, they didn't have any of the much or really any of the visuals that, like, accompanied it, right? So it's like, why is that? So it could be because my, again, theory is that they want to do it on their own terms. And doing it on their own terms is doing their own tour and is presenting it in a way that is new and different. Because if you'll remember, a couple years ago, they released the 10th anniversary edition of Black Parade, which had a bunch of like demos, live demos, B-sides, unreleased songs, stuff like that. So there's obviously more to the story here. And yes. Last time that they announced tour dates, they announced tour dates before they released a new song. I don't know if that's going to be the case in this this time. I hope it is, but again, what can you do? We just wait, we hang out, we see if they're going to. If they are, super. If they aren't, that's okay too. And yeah, like again, 10 dates, 9 in the US, 1 in Canada. And pretty big openers for all dates. There's no repeats. So, you know, they have like Garbage, Violent Femmes, Devo, Death Cab for Cutie, Thursday, Pixies, Alice Cooper, like a bunch of really interesting, you know, bands and stuff. So I'm very excited. I have looked at the video, watched the video, kind of looked at some stuff online. Evan, you know, and stuff, because it's exciting, especially when it's you know, a band you really like has announced something, but they've done it in such a way that really kind of draws you in and makes you a part of it and whatever. So love stuff like that. Tickets go on sale on Friday. So hopefully they won't be too badly priced. Fingers crossed they won't be. So hopefully we'll be able to go and see what's up and again see what goes on. Now, interestingly, this is my last kind of point. This is an inversion of the art kind of for Foundations of Decay, where Foundations of Decay is a burnt out city with its black and there's like ashes raining down. So it's just kind of like, are they connected? You know, what's going on there? Also, the concrete age is making me think, what does that mean? Obviously, there's tons of concrete in the video. Is this something, or am I just overthinking it? Anyway, it's fun to speculate. John, are you excited?
And I feel like I need some sort of like guide or something to follow along here. I didn't realize the My Chemical Romance mythos went so deeply. Well, listen, Em, I'm glad you're psyched on it. I'm psyched Alice Cooper is playing Philadelphia, and I might try to go to see Alice. I guess it'd be a dick move for me to go to see Alice and then leave after Alice.
No, you have to stay for MCR.
I actually, if I went, I definitely would just to check it out, just to see what I can see. But listen, Em, I'm glad you're having fun. I know full well how fun it is to be deep into a band. I'm trying to think, look, Gwar's got a lot of mythos to it, but the Gwar mythos isn't as linear as as My Chemical Romance. But it is cool that they have like all these stories that fit together with everything and all these secret puzzles. I'm trying to think, like, just like it's I watched Hellraiser, well, most of Hellraiser yesterday at lunch. And so it feels like
Oh,
that, like all
nice.
these puzzles and all this darkness and blah blah blah. So anyway, I'm glad you're having fun, Em. I'm psyched for you, and I hope you have a great time seeing Gerard Way and Frankie Arrow sing about dust or whatever they sing about.
I mean, we all turn into dust, so.
you interviewed Frankie Arrow for Punk News a little while ago, right?
I did, yeah, interviewed him about LS
And
Dune stuff, and he's the nicest person. He was so nice. It was a great
okay.
interview. I would love to talk to him again.
Well, there you have it. So, well, we'll see what we can do. So anyway, so yeah, so listen, My Chemical Romance, they're back and ready to play some shows with Alice Cooper. Speaking of an influence of My Chemical Romance, Em, we're talking Peter Murphy and Bauhaus.
Oh,
So a lot happened in the Peter Murphy world. A lot, first
so
of all,
much.
he just released two live albums. One is a bunch of covers, and one is just kind of like the standard Peter Murphy live concert. And I got both of them, even though they were like $45 each, which is
Oh,
obscene.
geez.
The
That's steep.
live, the covers, the live covers album, man, is actually like super, super good, except for it's like super lazy in that like
Oh.
most of the tracks have good sound quality, but a few are clearly just taken from some bootlegs. And there's one that's taken from some college radio show. And then it says, like, you are listening to, you know, Princeton 93.2, the college rock, or what, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's
Except for
funny.
it's funny, and it'd be interesting if that was like if that like closed out the side of a record, but it's like on the third track on side A. So it's just like this random audio clip that just like jumps out and then we never hear from again. So it's like, you know, if you're gonna charge people $45 for a record, I mean, I guess that's cool if it's like really well done, but it like the music itself is really good. But
Yeah.
it's like for $45, you know what, man? Pay a sound engineer $25 to clip out that audio that has nothing to do and equalize the music. You know what I mean? So it felt kind of lazy. However, Peter
Yes.
Murphy has released a new track. It's an abandoned Boy George track, and it's called Let the Flowers Grow. And they brought Boy George back on. So it is Peter Murphy, I would say the archetypal darkness 80s singer with Boy George, the archetypal 80s pop singer, together at last, Em.
Finally.
And Youth of Killing Joke produces it. And of course, Em, who else has Youth produced for in addition to Peter Murphy?
Oh, I know this. Oh, I know this. I'm blanking. I know there's like at
Many people, but
least
Paul McCartney
three.
has one.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought this track was cool, not amazing. Actually, I actually like it a lot. Actually, now I like it a lot. My only criticism of Youth is that like all the
Yes.
songs sound very stilted, and that they sound not organic at all. It sounds like someone singing over a computer, which I think that's what he wants it to be—kind of that very cold, robotic sound. But I like a little snap here and there, and so my criticism would be the songs start, but they don't really have any surprises by the end. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, like throw in like a breakdown or something.
Though I will say Youth is responsible for the best Peter Murphy solo album and the only good Peter Murphy solo album, Lion. But he's got a new one coming out, so and Youth's working with him, so maybe it'll be good. But
Hey.
also, Peter Murphy is yet again going on tour with the Celebrating David Bowie tour, which he was going to play Philadelphia. I mean, he was going to play North America, including Philadelphia, and I had tickets, and it was canceled because Peter Murphy had some, shall we say, unpleasantness in.
Unpleasantness is a good word.
So a couple questions, Em. Would you go see? Oh, and also Angelo Moore of Fishbone is with but
Yeah.
with Peter Murphy on stage at the same time, as well as Iggy Pop's Modern Backing Band. And let's see who else. A couple other people in it as well. Oh, Ron D of the Joe Bonamassa Band. I'm sure Ron D's a nice guy, but there was a Joe Bon like everyone's talking about Joe Bonamassa like over the past like five. And I'm like, who is Joe Bonamassa? Do you know who Joe Bonamassa is, Em?
I do not know who Joe
He's this
Bonamassa is.
really boring, like blues player, you know what I mean? Kind of like an Eric Clapton type guy.
Oh, yeah.
And like people like, oh, like, he understands the blues. I'm like, no, Howling Wolf understands the blues. This is just some jackass that wants to sound like Eric Clapton. Like, I don't know. Like, Joe Bonamassa, one of these guys just kind of came out of nowhere and is semi-famous and for doing, and you're like, why did this guy become semi-famous? And no one knows. It just goes to show you can't predict music at all, ever. Anyways.
No, you think you have a trend, you don't have a trend.
Like, you really can't trend. You really can't. And I mean, as proof of that, like, when you look at it, like, although major labels release far fewer records than they used to, 8 out of every 10 major label records fail, which is good. Like, if anybody should be able to harness the trend, it would be the major label. So if they can't figure it out, then who can, Em? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So anyways, so first of all, Em, would you go see this? B, if you would, are you mad that it's not North America? C, do you think Peter Murphy is still playing it too close to the unpleasantness? Like, is now a good time for him to get it back out on the road?
Ooh. I think that now would probably be a decent time to get back. Well, it's not until February, isn't it?
January.
Okay. Well, I think now would be a good time to get back out on the road because when the unpleasantness went on, the Bauhaus reunion wasn't too far removed from that, and I think that might have stoked the fire a little bit. Like, just, you know, old resentments and maybe old coping mechanisms. But I think this is really cool. I think they have a good lineup for it, and if it was in North America, I would definitely check it out and see what's going on, because I mean, they're all, and I'm not familiar with the person, Ron D. I'm sure Ron D can play very well.
I'm sure Ron D, like, is perfect. He's actually probably pretty good. I mean, if he plays with Joe Bonamassa, they are certainly technically capable. You know what I mean? Like, for sure. So I'm sure Joe D is perfectly good. And it'll be like when I saw Ringo Starr and the guy from Toto was there. I'm like, Toto. All right. You know, so.
And, like, have a bunch of people from the Iggy Pop's band, you know, Angela Moore, obviously, Peter Murphy. Like, it's a good lineup. I think they're going to do really cool things. I think the songs are going to sound really great. And, if it came to North America, I would definitely see what all the hype is about.
That's quite the combo, though, Em. Peter Murphy and Angelo Moore.
It is.
Kind of similar to Peter Murphy and Boy George, like two totally different. They're both divas for sure, Em. So, Em, along that line, do you think there's going to be unpleasantness there because they are both total divas and they both want the spotlight?
I don't think there's going to be unpleasantness.
Why?
I am being very optimistic. And I think that they are going to find a happy medium where they're both going to have their moment. Well, everybody is going to have their moments. And I don't know how they're going to do that, but I think they're going to do it. I am optimistic. Are you not?
I actually am I think it will not be unpleasantness for two reasons. A,
good.
I think it's clear from the onset that this is like Peter Murphy's the main star. You know what I mean? So if everyone understands that from the get-go, that's sort of understood. But also, even though Peter Murphy and Angela are both total weirdos, even though they both are divas, even though they both crave the spotlight, their genres are very different. So whereas if you put Peter Murphy and like the guy from Sisters of Mercy, I think there'd be drama because they're both like the goth champions, you know? But I don't think Peter Murphy feels he's in competition with Angelo Moore of a ska funk band. And I don't think Angelo Moore feels that he's in competition with Peter Murphy, you know? The godfather of goth, you know. So I actually think it's going to be really cool. And I maybe it will come back to North America, even though it failed totally last time. But I'd love to see this. So, actually, and speaking of combo team, let's hit this one, Em. Southern Culture and the Skids played Moe's Alley in Santa Cruz. I've been there many times, Em. When I lived in the Bay Area, I would go there all the time and see reggae legends. I saw Lee Scratch Perry there. I saw the Mighty Diamonds there. I saw Michael Rose of Black Yahoo there. I saw, I'm trying to think who else, Culture there. I saw, I saw a lot of Yellow Man. I've seen many, many absolute reggae legends there. one of my favorite clubs for sure, Moe's Alley. Anyway, Southern Culture, the Skids was playing there. A band that I've heard of many times that I actually don't like. I feel like Southern Culture, the Skids is like Americana roots rock. Is that who Southern Culture, the Skids is, Em?
Americana roots rock.
Like, what kind of band is Southern Culture on the Skids?
I could see the kind of like rootsy thing. I got sort of a rockabilly vibe, but that could also be because they're doing the Cramps.
No, I'm saying, do you know them?
No, I wasn't familiar with them, so I like Googled them and I checked out on their website. They have a video from I think their last album, which was released 3 or 4 years ago. And I listened to that, and I thought it was pretty good. It
but
was.
I mean, like, what kind of band are they? Like, you know what I mean? Here we go. Southern Culture Skid started as a straightforward roots rock group before morphing into a raucous, tongue-in-cheek party band obsessed with sex and fried chicken in the early 90s. So, yeah, it's like a roots rock band, I guess. So, anyways, I mean, like, I know a lot of people I know like this band. I guess I'll check them out. But, anyways, so Jello, I did know that Jello was a fan. So, Jello jumps up there and does Goo Goo Muck.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm like, at Punk News, people were extremely positive and excited about this. I was surprised by that. Like, I we post about Jello a lot, and a lot of times people are like, I don't get it. But, like, why are they so excited about Jello performing with Southern Culture on the Skids?
I think because it's an interesting crossover. They're doing a fun song, and there's a lot of, like, I think right now, especially, people are looking for joy and fun.
Mm.
And I think this is both joyful and fun. So I think it's, you know, people are going, hell yeah, I enjoy this. I think this is cool. And two thumbs up.
Jello and actually, if you live in the Bay Area, it's really cool because Jello does this a lot. Like, I've seen many shows where Jello jumps up there and does a song. I saw Amoebix during the reunion, and he did Lardactyl with a Fucked Up. They did Blitzkrieg Bob was great. Is
oh cool.
So Damien's up. This was right after Chemistry Common Life. Damien's up there. Jello comes out. This naked guy jumps up on stage and jumps on Damien's back, a totally naked man.
Oh my
and
God.
Jello is singing Blitzkrieg Bop and spanking the guy at the same time, which was hilarious. I saw Jello do a song with King Khan. I can't remember what song. I might not even know what song it was, or maybe it was like some song from the 60s. I'm trying to think who else I saw. So anyway, like, if you live in the Bay Area, it's pretty common to see Jello come out and jump up, which is, and honestly, it's pretty freaking awesome. So anyway, and Jello has done many combos in the studio. Jello and the Melvins, Jello and No Means No, Jello and DOA. Jello and Mojo Nixon. Who would you like to see Jello do a combo with next?
That's tough. Do you have one? I'm gonna need a minute.
Well, I would say Jello and the Melvins because I saw it twice and it is friggin' awesome. But if I can't say the Melvins,
but they've already done it.
Yeah, right. Fair. So let me pick.
Has to be new.
Let me pick. Let's see. It has to be. You know, it has to be like someone's. Like, you can't say like Jello and like Off, which would be awesome. But like, that's like too obvious. You know what I mean?
It would be really cool.
So we'll say Jello and let me think. There's a couple of them that I'm batting around in my head. Here's an obvious one end that I don't think would work as well, so I won't say it.
What was it?
I was gonna say Jello and Scow, but then
interesting.
If Jello's singing, that means Cat's not singing as much, and so then it's not quite as special. You know what I mean? So, but I was thinking, like, what if you had Jello with like a mostly female band, a band? Well, Soji has, I think, two women and two men. Like, Jello with a band like Soji would be kind of cool, but like, but that's a little too obscure. I'm thinking of a band. I'm trying to think of a band that like people know,
like moderately well known band.
Like Jello and Amy on the Sniffers, but then again, if you put Jello there, but what's Amy do? You know what I mean? So it's got to fit a little bit better than that. You know what I mean? So let me think here. You could say like a folk band, but I don't want Jello with a folk band. I want Jello with a full on band. You know what I mean?
Who?
I would say Jell-O and remaining members of Nick Turner's band now that he's passed away. So that would be kind of cool. But the problem is like no one really knows who those guys are so much, you know. It's got to be people who like a band that people know. So I will say let me think about this. I would say Jell-O and Cat Bite, but I don't know if Jell-O and ska fits together that well. You know what I mean?
I could see Jell-O doing a mean ska.
That's not gonna be my. He actually did do a ska song once. He did a Reoccupy ska version with DOA. Oh. It's actually a pretty cool song. But I will say Jell-O and let's see. I'm thinking what bands am I really into right now? Jell-O and I've got it, Em.
Okay. Though
this is actually going. This is going against what I kind of my established rules. Jell-O with Alice Cooper and the Alice Cooper band.
Interesting.
But if I have to pick a newer band, I will say Jell-O. I would say like Lotion. Lotion actually kind of, that'll be my pick, Jell-O and Lotion. Because Lard is kind of an industrial band. Lotion is sort of an industrial band, but there's room for Jell-O to be on there. So I will say Jell-O and Lotion Multinational Corporation. That is my final answer, Em. Em, what's your pick?
That is a good final answer. Ooh, again, like there's so many. Like I think Jell-O with Fucked Up would be really interesting, just because I think they would make some.
I would agree.
Wild, like
I would agree, but I would only want Jell-O with Fucked Up if they only do hardcore and totally far out stuff like Oberon and Year of the Horse. I don't want Jell-O and Fucked Up college rock style.
You know, that's fair enough. I think that's totally fair enough.
Although I will say, I actually like your answer better than mine. Like, if they did do a Jell-O album with Fucked Up, like some hardcore and some totally far out stuff, that actually might be like, that might rival Jell-O and the Melvins for Jell-O's best solo stuff. Like, that would actually be an incredible record. That's a good answer, Em.
Oh, thank you. And for like newer band, like, I have a few that I think would be cool. Like, Shooting Daggers, which are like a hardcore punk band out of the UK, would be really neat. And I also think that Third Face would be cool, because I think they could like blend in really well. And that would be just, you know, fast, awesome stuff. But again, there's just so many.
How about Jell-O and Gwar, Em?
Have they done anything together before?
Only in the most vaguest ways is Dave Brocky did backing vocals on a Tumor Circus record. Tumor Circus is one of Jell-O's many projects. Also, Jell-O said Death Piggies, I think it was their second record, was his favorite record of the year for like 1983 or whatever, or when that record came out. And Jell-O portrays a character in one of the Gwar movies, but they've never really done a full-on record together.
Again, they could have a lot of like cool things with that. Like, they could get really into the lore. Now, you see, that would be interesting. Jell-O with MCR, because Heath Morris is on an MCR song.
Oh, so, he is?
Yeah, he's on Hang 'Em High off of Three Cheers. There's a part where it's like kind of someone's talking backwards and stuff. That's him.
How would this end? Jell-O and 34 Trolley, the parent of Screaming Females.
That would be cool. That would be really cool. Yeah, kind of like a more dancier Jell-O. I could see it.
Honestly, I would even say Jell-O and Mean Jeans, although maybe Mean Jeans aren't weird enough for Jell-O. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to fit that threshold there.
Well, anyways, here's my final answer.
Yes.
Chrome, the band Chrome right now is in disarray because poor Helios Creed has had some issues. Jell-O Biafra and Chrome. That's my final answer, Em. Anyways, let's see. Anything else that we should talk about tonight? Let's see. Pitchfork Fest. We want to talk about that briefly. Pitchfork Fest will not return to Chicago Union Field for the first time in 19 years. They were not clear if they won't return at all to anywhere or just not to Chicago. This follows the acquisition of Pitchfork by Condé Nast, and also it follows, and I appeared to be the only one that thought this was interesting, that if you recall, Riot Fest had problems with Chicago earlier this year too.
Oh, yes.
Now it appears that Pitchfork might be, but that might be, it might be related, or maybe it's because Pitchfork is low on money, or you know, Condé Nast doesn't feel that that's a good advertisement or whatever, or promo idea. So anyway, the point being, Em, is do you think this is do you think it's a coincidence, or do you think this is a symptom of problems with Chicago officials?
I didn't consider that. I don't think so. I think it might be, but I don't think that's the main reason why they're not returning to Chicago.
I do. I do think it's the main reason. I don't know if Pitchfork Fest actually makes any money or not. But I would say that they probably are having trouble with Chicago officials. And they're like, you know what? We don't make enough money on this. It's not worth the headache. Or this is not how Condé Nast wants to invest their time and money. And Chicago officials being a pain makes it really not worth our while. So we're not going to do it anymore. I think it is related, to tell you the truth.
Okay. It could easily be. Yeah, I kind of think they're doing the thing where, you know, they buy it and then they just kind of close off everything that makes it cool and unique and just start shutting it down.
So you think it's on Condé Nast's end, not on Chicago's end?
Those are my thoughts. But again, it could be on the Chicago end. It could be a multitude of things.
I guess semi-related, Download Fest announced a bunch of bands that are playing Download Fest, and I still don't understand why Download Fest is called Download. Like, why is it called Download Fest? And like, that name makes no sense to me. But two things I want to mention real quick is, and this is very common now. Festivals used to have some kind of graphic or theme with their poster. Now they just list the bands playing and don't put any effort into the poster at all. It's literally just like, here are the bands that are playing, which I hate, and I think makes the festival seem so less fun. And I want some sort of fun graphic to set the scene. Second of all, I noticed that it's no longer being billed as members of the Sex Pistols with Frank Carter playing Sex Pistols. It's billed as Sex Pistols with Frank Carter. That is before Jones. What the hell's his first name, man? Jones.
Steve Jones.
Glenn Matlock and Paul Cook were saying it's we three playing the music of Sex Pistols. Now those three are saying they are the Sex Pistols.
Well, but above the Sex Pistols logo, there is Steve Jones, Paul Cook, and Glenn Matlock.
But then it says Sex Pistols featuring Frank Carter.
But it does have their names above Sex Pistols.
Well, I think that's just so John Lydon can't, I guess. And I think John Lydon is suing them or has sued them. But I think it's so they can say it's not. I think they're doing that so they can't say that, so that John Lydon can't say that, well, you're making it seem like I'm performing, you see.
Oh, fair enough.
So I believe John Lydon does own 1/4 of the Sex Pistols. So it's interesting, but I guess he got outvoted, but I am surprised that they are able to use the Sex Pistols name without John Lydon. And maybe technically they're not allowed to. But I believe them, this is the first festival where we're seeing it being billed as Sex Pistols and not as the three individual members with Frank Carter. So AM, are you, A, do you hate these kind of crappy posters? B, do you find the Sex Pistols thing interesting? C, would you want to see the Sex Pistols without John Lydon? The answer is no. There's no point in seeing Sex Pistols without John Lydon. I mean, the other guys are great musicians, but it just rings very hollow. I would consider seeing Steve Jones, Paul Cook, and Glenn Matlock with Frank Carter playing music of the Sex Pistols, but calling this a Sex Pistol seems wrong. I realize that Lydon has said some uncool stuff, and it's not cool. But even so, I still think he's entitled to be I still think he's entitled to the respect that it's not Sex Pistols without Lydon. What's your take, Em?
First of all, the poster. The more I've looked at it, an underwater theme has emerged. It looks like there is algae and bubbles and possibly a tentacle or two.
But why? I mean, but why?
I am not quite sure.
This poster's hideous, Em. It's hideous. And it's boring and it's stupid. But as we've talked about, as those mega festivals by Golden Voice and Live Nation have proved them, it doesn't matter if you put no effort into your poster or your theme or even the shows themselves. People will buy it. Like they truly have scientifically mastered how to extract money from people through the music festival. Like they've cut off all the unnecessary fat, which is where John loses all his money in punk news shows. Oh, let's have, programs. Let's have a giant Jab of the Hutt, you know? Let's have goodie bags. These festivals have realized that is all a complete waste, and even any sort of imagery or artistic touch is a waste of money because it doesn't matter. They get the same or even more money without that just by strictly listing the bands on the flyer, like a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Do you know who did have a really cool poster? Hugfest.
Party in Jabba's Palace.
That too. With Sex Pistols, with Frank Carter, I do find, like, it's one of those things where it's like, it is the majority of them, you know? So I do think they have a right to use the name.
A legal right or an artistic moral right?
I think probably more, well, again, I don't know what the legalities are, but probably like an artistic right, because it's like, well, we're here. We had a part in writing the songs.
See, John I Lydon disagree.
Also had a part in writing the songs. I'm not discounting it, but like,
I think they do not have a moral right to be the Sex Pistols without John Lydon. And I don't think John Lydon can be the Sex Pistols without them.
Well, okay, that's fair. Yeah, like if John Lydon was going around saying, come see me, I am the Sex Pistols.
I'd say that's not Sex Pistols. I'd say that's John, that's Pill, is what I would say. That's Pill doing the music of Sex Pistols, which I would go see.
The videos I saw one video of this lineup with Frank Carter, and he did a really good job. So it's one of those things where if I was going to Download Festival, I would 100% go and see them. Would I buy tickets if they toured? I don't know.
If I was at Download Festival, I would go, of course. I mean, why not? You're there. You know, who am I going to go see? Like Third Eye Blind or something, you know? Or Korn. But would I buy tickets to go see this? No, I wouldn't.
Well, I mean, like, they have some neat bands and artists.
Would you go see the Dead Kennedys without Jello? I certainly would not.
No, I wouldn't.
So how's this different than Dead Kennedys without Jello?
I think because they have a, obviously no one can replace John Lydon, but like, I think because they have a charismatic frontman.
So if it was Frank Carter, the Dead Kennedys, would it be the Dead Kennedys?
I don't think Frank Carter's voice would be able to, or like, I don't think his voice would suit Dead Kennedys music. It suits Sex Pistols. I don't think it would suit Dead Kennedys.
Is there anyone that could tour Dead Kennedys and not Jello, and you would say it was Dead Kennedys?
Well, I don't think it's ever going to be Dead Kennedys without Jello, and I don't think it's going to be fully Sex Pistols without John Lydon, but like, I'm just trying to think, because like Frank Carter, like I said, matches the energy and the vocal like stylings, you know, really well. So I'm just trying to think, like, if there's anybody who would fall into that with Jello, and it's like right now I'm drawing a blank just because he does have a unique vocal delivery.
I think Joe's completely irreplaceable, and I think Lydon is completely irreplaceable. I mean, listen, I think these guys should be able to play the music. I just don't think it's the Sex Pistols, and I'm annoyed that they're calling it the Sex Pistols, you know.
And you'd rather just have these guys do the music of the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, honestly, like the way Steve Ignorant does it. It's not crass. It's Steve Ignorant plays crass, and everyone is cool with it. You know, even Penny Rimbaud's cool with it at this point, you know.
Yeah, that's
except
a good point.
There's a slight difference there, though, in that it's Steve Ignorant was a singer of Crass, you know. Well, it's not different, though, because the other members of Crass aren't there. And if he called it Crass, I would say it's definitely not Crass. But since he calls it Steve Ignorant does Crass, I'm like, yeah, it's Steve Ignorant saying the music of Crass, you know. So, so yeah, so I'm annoyed by this. And I think, listen, I'm sure Light is not easy to deal with, but that being said, that's why he's so great, because he's a weirdo and he's difficult to deal with. So yeah. Great artists are usually not that easy to deal with. Sometimes they are, but you know, a lot of times they're weird and freaky and difficult to deal with. So yeah. Anyway, Em, anything else you want to cover tonight? Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I'm going to go into a 5-hour spiral with MCR lore. So we're going to start out with the first album and everything it means. But no, that'll be another podcast. That'll be a full podcast.
And do you have any MCR fan fiction?
Oh, no. That's not my bag. I am not a fan of that.
The first time I saw Morrissey, and I consider myself a pretty big Morrissey fan, at least the music. This is before he really got taken to task. But you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm a pretty big Morrissey fan, but I bet there's bigger Morrissey fans than me for sure. So I'm at this concert. I'm sitting next to this lady, and she starts telling me about her. It was like 300,000 word book, fan fiction book about Morrissey and Johnny Marr, except for now they're Mexican. And their boyfriends, and she went on for about 25 minutes about her 300,000 word fan fiction about Morrissey, and I'm like, I didn't read it, Em. No, I mean I was at the show, Em. She didn't like bring it with her, but she's telling me about it. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, wow, like I'm not even like the 97th percentile of Morrissey fans. I'm like at the bot. Like, damn, man. Like, Morrissey fans are extremely hardcore. I wonder if My Chemical Romance fans are that hardcore.
Oh, yes, they are.
I believe it.
Would you like to guess which famous book series and also movie series was based on fan fiction that the author wrote about Gerard Way?
Wait, say that again?
So there is a famous book series that got turned into movies, and the original, like, obviously she had to change the name, the author had to change the names and stuff, but it was originally a fan fiction that they wrote about Gerard Way.
You don't mean Fifty Shades of Grey, do you?
Well, 50 Shades of Grey is based on this fan fiction.
No, I thought 50 Shades of Grey was based on Twilight.
Exactly. Twilight is based on, it started life as fan fiction about.
It did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So on Danger Days, they have a song called Vampire Money, because they were contacted quite a few times to provide a song for the soundtrack for the movies, and they were like, no, we don't want to do that, and they repeatedly turned them down and turned them down and turned them down. So Vampire Money is their reaction to that.
Well, there you have it. Anyways, so that's what's happening. Keep listening to the Punk News podcast. I guess you can reach the podcast at punknews.org. Yeah, you know, we're going to keep doing our thing, and new end of year stuff is going to be coming up somewhat soon. And yeah, so otherwise, we'll see you next week.